Welcome to Bell Folks Stuff, an experimental podcast where I talk to interesting folks about really important stuff that they enjoy doing. Let's get started. Evening, everybody. It has been 5 years since I last recorded a Bell Folks Stuff. And I'm not 100% sure if I remember how to do this. And as a result, I invited my really close friend, Grace, to experiment with me on this.
Hi, I'm a guinea pig.
You're the best guinea pig. And so, like, there's a bunch of stuff changing. Like, I'm recording in a different way than I normally record Agar Chat. So here's hoping we end up with a usable product. For those who haven't listened to this much, I mean, like, I've been re-releasing episodes to give me time to record new ones. But kind of the gist of this show is I sit down with somebody that, like, I am personally interested in, and is oftentimes a good friend of mine. And we talk through a fixed battery of questions. And, like, that wasn't really something formal in the previous incarnation for the first 7 episodes, but I am formalizing it. So, like, I have a sample battery of questions. I'm giving them out to the people who are recording with me ahead of time. So hopefully Grace has had a chance to at least look them over to understand what I'm going to ask.
Sure.
Of course, right? we're just going to wing it. So kind of the first thing that I've always done when recording this show is talk a little bit about how I know the person. And Grace and I have done this before, but I'm not 100% sure if I remember all of it. But, like, I know it was blog related.
Yes, it was blog related.
Yeah, because, like, I remember Moonshine Mansion, and, like, it was a great WildStar blog. And did it exist prior to WildStar?
No, it was created entirely because of WildStar. I started it during the beta.
Pour one out to WildStar.
Yeah, sigh.
Like, on some level, I keep hoping that someone will leak the server code so that we can have emulator servers, but, like, I don't think that's actually going to happen.
I mean, some people are working on it, but I don't know what sort of timeline there might be to have anything resembling fully functional.
Yeah, I had read, like, a forum post a while back, and they were like, they started working on it a little too late and they hadn't captured all of the operations codes. So they're not 100% sure they can make it work, but, like, they're going to try real hard. And then, like, you and I conversed infrequently on Twitter. And it was really when I somehow convinced you to play or join us for Final Fantasy XIV that we really became close friends.
Yeah. So I, another friend of mine that I had played SWTOR with, had convinced me to try FF14. So I was just kind of starting to poke around in that game and a little bit intimidated by the fact that it pretty much had mandatory dungeons to complete the story and didn't have any idea about what a great community that game had and how fun those dungeons would end up being. So I think just at some point, either on your blog or in a tweet, you had mentioned that, you know, you guys had your guild and you were doing stuff, and I just asked if I could tag along. And I think I happened to be on Cactuar anyway, so it just worked out.
And you leveled like crazy. Like, that was our first experience with you, is that, like, you went through the content, like, in a week, I swear.
I'm not sure if it was quite that fast, but, yeah, I maybe, especially back at that time, definitely had a reputation for leveling super fast. I know I very much intimidated my SWTOR guilds, who I also met through various people's blogs, because they were all trying to get away from serious raiding and just have fun. And suddenly I joined and leveled a character from scratch in about a week.
Well, what cracked me up the out. What cracked me up the most about it is, like, I had developed a reputation for leveling extremely quickly. Like, that was a thing that people said about me, but, like, you took it to a totally new level that I had not experienced. Like, because Final Fantasy XIV is not really a game that is easy to just, like, head down, grind it out.
No, it's full of story and, you know, again, those mandatory dungeons and extra trials and things. Yeah, but it was really good, and I was having tons of fun, and I still hadn't quite burned out on the whole healing pugs thing yet, so once I started getting comfortable with a few dungeons, I didn't mind throwing myself at stupidity and ended up able to try some nonsense endgame things with you folks.
Yeah, because, like, you quickly slid into a pretty permanent healer spot with us. I think we were working on Coil. Like, we were yep, like, halfway through Coil or something, because you weren't there for the first Coils, and we kind of had to play catch-up. But, like, I know you were definitely there for, like, the last two Coils.
Yes.
So what's funny is, like, okay, like, I have so many fond memories about that time. And it was a lot of things. Like, it was the group of people we were playing with. It was the state of Cactuar at that time, because, like, I don't know. Like, I'm not around Final Fantasy a lot, so I can't tell if it's changed or if it's just me. But it seemed like there was this huge spirit of openness on that server. And, like, we were bumping into random people constantly and doing stuff with them. And, like, we had the guild house, and I miss that guild house so much.
I do too.
Because I miss our neighbors. That's really what I miss. Like, I liked the house, but I liked our neighbors because, like, our little community was so cool whenever we first got the guild house. Because, like, all these random people started inviting us to link shells that were, like, based on our neighborhood. And I was constantly running off and doing stuff with people that I had met through the neighborhood that, like, were just hanging out crafting in front of our house.
Yeah, the people hanging out down by the market board.
And that's something that's never happened with our current house. Like, I like our current house. You know, Saul has done an amazing job decorating it, but I don't know, like, it doesn't feel the same to me. Like, it's not as special as the previous one.
Yeah, it doesn't have all those memories attached to it. I also just, I prefer the Limsa style, so I miss that as well, but really it's...
Till sea swallows all. I'm a late convert to Maelstrom. Like, I started off as, like, I mean, obviously I was a Marauder. I started in Limsa, but I, for whatever reason, decided to go Old War, or not Old War. God, what's the name of that town? I'm drawing a blank. What is the name of that town? Olda.
Sorry, there I haven't played FF14 in a long time either, as you can tell.
Yeah, like I knew Old War wasn't right, but, like, it's something like that.
Olda, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, I was for Coining Country for a while, and then at some point I decided to burn down my reputation and go back home to Limsa.
You made the right choice.
It's true. It really is the correct choice. Who doesn't love pirates?
Right.
But yeah, like, that was just, like, this magic time, and with the expansions, it feels like it's never been quite as magical as it was at that point.
Yeah, it was a very good time. I enjoyed quite a bit of Heavensward as well. I mean, I've enjoyed the beginnings of all of the expansions, but we kept, you know, the band together through a lot of Heavensward, and that made it, you know, feel much better with the other expansions. You know, either I bounced quick or other people eventually trailed off, and just the interest in beating our heads against the raid scene just wasn't there.
Well, I guess for me, like, there was this whole culture that's invaded Final Fantasy XIV of get good, and, like, the expectations of players has changed, and I don't know if I'm on board with that. Like, I liked our you know, fun little group, that, you know, we had a blend of super serious and like not so serious, but it all kind of worked. But it's been so long since I've actively rated, like it would just be a challenge to get back into rating in any game at this point.
Yeah, me too. And I agree also about the get good culture, because that was ultimately what made me bounce more quickly in the last few expansions, because I like playing a healer, but the meta for healers has shifted in a direction that I just don't enjoy, and the expectations of the amount of DPSing and other things that you should be doing while you're healing, even in just dungeons, or the amount of ridiculous pulls that people do in dungeons are not fun for me.
Well, I mean, the same is true on the tank side too, because like tanks are expected to like keep up the DPS while they're tanking, and like, yeah, okay, that's fine, but like that's not why I tank. Like, yeah. Aggro control is what I enjoy. Like, you enjoy healing butts.
Exactly.
Not DPSing. If I wanted to DPS, I'd just play a damn DPS.
Yes. And I mean, it's a funny balance, because I enjoy being able to throw out some DPS when I'm bored, but I actively dislike the expectation that I must be DPSing any moment when I am not pressing a healing button.
Yeah, I think that's it too. Because, like, you know, I liked switching stances to go DPS for a while, but like it was a bonus. And so long as it was a bonus, it was fun. But like when it's expected, it stops being fun.
Yeah. Don't tell me what to do.
You're not my real dad. Okay. So yeah, like in just to catch things up, like, Grace is often my partner in crime for doing nonsense, and like we've done a bunch of just silly things, like, you know, Robo Squids, and, you know, our every 3 month binge of Diablo.
Yes, yeah, I know that anytime I get a really stupid idea, I can usually count on you to jump into it with me. So it's been great.
So next bullet point. How did you get your gaming handle?
So my gaming handle, my Twitter handle, is Disgrace. And it stems back to my time playing WoW. So Grace was not my first character by any stretch. It wasn't even really my first main, but it was the first character that I ended up raiding on, and the one that I've become the most attached to over the years. And the story of it is, somehow, even though I started playing right at the beginning of Burning Crusade, so by no means early, when I made the character, I thought it would be funny to have a Forsaken priest whose name was Grace, and that name was somehow not taken. So I became Grace for a long time, and became attached to that character, and so I'm sort of, that's the name that I most associate with myself. And then as I've had to re-roll in other places and to try to differentiate myself a little bit for Twitter and things, because I was always a disciplined priest, I belittled myself enough to make my handle a pun. So it is Disgrace.
And I've always appreciated it because it's a pun.
I mean, I am one of the people in our group who will leave channels when people start telling terrible puns, but somehow I still have one for my handle.
I think it's good. I am probably one of the ones that will start pasting puns and get people to leave the channels. I find them hilarious, but like I blame my father for that. He loved puns.
Yeah, my dad does too. But we have a separate channel to quarantine those.
The day that got created cracked me up. Like it was when I realized how devoted to not having puns people were. And my mission in life is to continue to subtly break out of that channel.
It was a fairly entertaining time seeing that process happen, even being on the opposite side of that argument.
I want to say, like, it started with a bunch of food-based puns.
I think it was me, right.
And Neff and Gabri and maybe Ammo. Just kept a string of them going. And then Ash put down the foot. Ash also doesn't like puns. Even though he fairly often uses them.
I mean, that's how I feel. I will still tell puns, but I still hate puns, and I will feel bad about myself when I say one. But the other thing I remember about when that whole incident happened was that I don't know whether it was Kotra, somebody pulled us all into that channel, and then Ash and I and whoever else didn't appreciate it. Just had to keep leaving.
It always makes me kind of sad when somebody leaves a channel. Like, I get it that you just don't want to be spammed by it, but, like, it always makes me kind of sad. So-and-so's left the channel. Aww.
I end up muting some channels, like the FF14 channel, when I'm not actively playing it, because some people are still really active and having events and things, and I don't want to be spammed, so I'll just mute it and go and poke my head in once in a while and see what's up.
Yeah, like, I always, I don't know, like, after we've had a couple conflagrations where people left channels in anger, like, I'm always afraid to leave channels for the takeaway that somebody's going to make from that. Okay, next on the list. What is your earliest gaming memory?
So, I was thinking about this a little bit, and I'm pretty sure that my earliest gaming memory is playing the Smurfs game on the Atari that my uncle had. So
that was not a good game.
I was definitely young enough that it didn't matter because I was super into the Smurfs, I guess. But yeah, one of my uncles bought an Atari and kept it up at my grandmother's house so that when myself and my 10,000 Irish Catholic cousins would come to visit my grandmother, we could play the Atari. So I remember sort of sitting around occasionally by myself or with one of my family, often one of my cousins, and obviously playing other games too. But I think that one in particular was probably one of the first ones that I had tried. So they had Pitfall and, you know, a bunch of the other sort of classic ones, but yeah, no. It was not good.
But I went through a period where I was obsessed with Smurfs as well.
Yeah, I definitely, at that age, was super into them. So, you know, it was appealing. But, I mean, I had to have been super young. I don't have a good sense of what age that was. But, you know, I must have been 4 or 5, maybe.
I'm pretty sure. So, like, I want to say it was either kindergarten or first grade, and I only know this because that's when I had my tonsils out, and the first time I encountered a Smurf was when, like, one of my parents brought one to me from the gift shop at the hospital, and it was, like, a knight in shining armor Smurf-looking thing. And I was super into, like, little toy soldiers. Like, that was my jam. Like, I was already a miniature gamer, like, when I was a little kid, because I loved them. And I know that's why they got it. But, like, I didn't know what a Smurf was until then. And, like, I became obsessed with them. Even the ones that didn't have weapons.
Yeah, I was a Smurf fan as a small child. But yeah, I was trying to think of all of my various gaming related early memories. And that's definitely the earliest. It's maybe not the most meaningful to me, which is a very odd memory, but that was the earliest.
So, like, what are some of your favorite games?
Boy, that's a loaded
question. It's a loaded question. Yeah, like, I mean.
So definitely going all the way back to ancient history, Super Mario Brothers 3 just sort of is the pinnacle of that era of Nintendo gaming for me.
It was just so good. Like, and it still is today. Like, I've got it on the Switch has the Nintendo and the Super Nintendo app where you can like download and play old games. And like, I've played a bunch of Super Mario 3 because it still absolutely holds up.
Yeah, I re-bought it for the Wii when I was actively playing that. And it was, it held up surprisingly well. But it was just, you know, at the time it was so amazing and it was so formative because it got me hooked on that style of game. It also was something that we played socially all the time, which is just, you know, a huge part of growing up was going over to my friend's house and playing Nintendo. So that one is definitely a big one for me. And then as we sort of move along, Diablo definitely makes the list. And the original and Diablo 3, I never played 2 when it was current. I probably would have also fallen down that rabbit hole, but I only played it recently and that wasn't, didn't feel as great.
It didn't hold up real well. Like,
no.
Like, I have so many fond memories of Diablo 2, but like coming back and playing it, it just does. Like, I'd probably rather play Diablo 1 at this point than play Diablo 2.
At least Diablo 1 is sort of simple and pure. Diablo 2 has a lot of layers of complication, which were probably super cool at the time, but now make it feel very cumbersome.
Yeah, and like, so I remember a lot playing a lot of Diablo 2 at a specific workplace that I'm not going to go into detail on because we're admitting that we were playing Diablo 2 at a workplace. But like, I remember we had a computer that we called our server, and it basically just had like a dummy character logged in 24/7. So that you could, like, if you're playing, you could connect into that, or you could invite that character to a game, and it would keep the game open, and, like, you'd go through Tristram, and there were just piles of gold everywhere. Like, you just come into the Tristram that's attached to that character and just drop your gold wherever. You know, because, like, you ended up with so much freaking gold, and there were 4 of us that were playing around and like dropping weapons for each other, and you know, so that aspect was really fun, but like that's also like a specific moment in time that can't be really repeated.
Right. Yeah, I mean, for me it was the original Diablo. I played the PlayStation port, and that still, it was a very like social in the sit on the couch and watch your friends play, and just sit around chatting while you murdered all the demons. And so that is, you know, that was maybe college time for me. And that spirit has just carried through in the way that I continue to play Diablo today, just hang out with a friend chatting and murdering all the demons. But yeah, then we sort of get into slightly more recent things. And I mean, I have to say World of Warcraft, because it changed the way that I play games, and I've made so many friends because I got into MMOs in general. And World of Warcraft in particular, although I don't keep in touch with any of these particular friends anymore, you know, there was a point in time where I was going through some pretty serious health issues, and the fact that there was this whole world where there was always a human being around to talk to when it was the middle of the night and I couldn't sleep because of pain or whatever, you know, other problems I was having, there was always someone else around. It was just really important to me. Got me through some rough stuff.
That game was just so magical in the way that we interacted with it. And I realized part of it is it was doing things that weren't available in other games. But like another part of it was just this giant community. And it was a time when like everyone was playing the same game. And the only thing that I can really think of in modern history that is comparable is like when Pokemon Go released and blew up. Like that was a time when everyone was playing the same thing. And it used to be like just random conversations would come up that you'd find out somebody played World of Warcraft and you either had an instant friend or an instant enemy, depending on which faction they were. But like even in then, it was like just the fact that like this other person did this thing that you were doing. Because I don't know about you, but like growing up playing games, I always felt fairly isolated in doing so, that it wasn't a quote unquote normal activity.
I don't know that I quite felt that way. I count myself lucky because I have a lot of women friends who are gamers now who had really bad experiences or just somewhat, I don't know how to put it, just various things that put them off. Like you said, making people feel like it's a weird thing to do. I never really got to any place where I felt that way until actually the era of World of Warcraft. Up until then, games, whether video games or tabletop games, it was just something that I always did with my friends. It was never weird because all the weirdos I hung out with were all doing it all the time. It wasn't until really playing MMOs that I started running into the people who quote unquote joked that, oh, girls don't play video games and stupid things like that.
Yeah. And I wonder if that time made that worse.
I expect that it did, because my impression is that some women who are my age or older grew up playing games socially and maybe had some weird experiences with tabletop games, but video games were just kind of a thing that every kid did and didn't become a boys' activity until a little bit later. But then again, my perspective on it is probably not entirely clear because I actively did not do very many feminine, stereotypically girls hobbies and play with girls' toys and things as much either as a kid. So my perspective is probably a little unusual.
Yeah, and my experience was just weird because, like, so growing up, you know, some of my female friends that were like some of my earliest friends because they were like neighbors to my grandparents, like that, all of my early D&D memories and stuff like that were with a friend of mine's brother. And she would play and her sister would play. And we had like all these women in this gaming group. So like it always seemed completely normal. And then that all kind of changed when we went to middle school. And I continued to do pen and paper and video games. And like my male friends continued to play Nintendo, but like all of a sudden my female friends disappeared. And it was this great, you know, culling of all the female friends that used to play games with me were just no longer around. They were not interested that anymore. It's like, I don't know, like, I mean, maybe that's a thing that just normally happens, but like, it did seem weird. I remember thinking it was weird at the time.
I expect that to some extent, because of my own gender obliviousness, put it that way, that I ended up sort of making my own bubble that self-reinforced where there were other women around, because as you know, I am frequently full of terrible ideas and like to drag other people along with me into them. So, you know, in school, I was always inviting my friends over to play games. And, you know, by high school, it was, oh, hey, let's all play Magic the Gathering and drag my male and female friends along for that ride indiscriminately. You know, it was just, this is a thing we're going to do now. And maybe it was partially enabled because I didn't want to give those things up and go do the stereotypical girl stuff, and never got into a lot of the things that distracted my female friends away from games. I don't know.
Yeah, because like for me, it started to change again when I got to high school, mostly because we started spending a lot of time in a larger town, one town over, which had like a much larger pool of people. So like I found new female friends and started playing games again. Cause like we were big into like Vampire the Masquerade. And not that we did a lot of LARPing, but we did some LARPing, and that was definitely a community that had lots of women in it.
Yeah. I don't talk about Vampire the Masquerade.
I know. I said that and then I remembered. Oh yeah.
Yeah. No, that, I mean, it's not the actual reason, but I liked call it the reason that my ex-fiance and I split up. I mean, the actual reason is that he got someone else pregnant, but it was someone else that he met while LARPing, so.
Yeah.
Which is a hilarious story today. It wasn't hilarious at the time, but in retrospect, it just makes me laugh a lot.
Yeah, because that's not a sequence of events that you expect.
Nope. Dodge that bullet anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so another deep question. What would you change about gaming or gaming communities if you could?
So I think there's a couple of aspects to this, but I mean, we've sort of been touching on one of them, which is I wish that I could just erase all of the stereotypes associated with gaming and start over from scratch. And I kind of feel like with mobile gaming lately that we're starting this process. But I wish that games were a little more normalized and a little less gatekeepy.
Yeah. And I wonder if, like, this is just a problem with our generation and we have baggage to deal with, and that maybe the generations that are coming up now won't even have this as a thing because gaming will be so ubiquitous.
I mean, there's definitely something to be said for mobile games and phone games. I mean, my mom is not what any stereotypical gamer would define as a gamer, but she plays video games on her tablet constantly. And I think that's pretty cool. So I'm hoping as that kind of activity gets more normalized, that we can try to figure out how to break down that divide and recognize that we're all people who like poking at screens and getting pixels, and I don't know, it would be nice.
It's been a weird situation with me at work because like I'm in management now, and if you go to my office, there's like all of these tchotchkes associated with video games, and inevitably when somebody new starts, they'll eventually go by my office and see these things and then strike up a conversation. It's like they feel safe to out themselves because someone in management also is a gamer geek. And it's still weird that that's a thing, like that that's a concern. But I feel like also the Switch is maybe helping to break down barriers because it's such a versatile console. Because like I know a lot of people that have Switches that don't own any other consoles. Like that's just a thing, kind of like the Wii was that way as well.
Yeah, that's true. I remember some of my much older relatives were enthralled by the Wii. And there's definitely Nintendo is very good in their branding about being innocuous and welcoming and non-threatening. In a way that I think draws more people in than stereotypical PC or other console gaming.
Well, and I feel like Nintendo games in general, at least first-party Nintendo games, have never really suffered from advertising that genders them. Because like, there were a lot of questionable ads through the 90s and 2000s for games like absolutely positioned them towards a specific gender, aka towards, you know, white men.
Yeah. I mean, I think back of a game I played a ton of that had a female protagonist, which was great, and was 100% created for the male gaze, Tomb Raider.
But like, I remember playing Tomb Raider, and like, I didn't play much of it because at the time I didn't own a PlayStation. But I remember thinking that Tomb Raider was just Mario 64 in much higher fidelity, because like, to me, it was doing the same thing. It was like, oh, here's this big 3D world you can explore. And I thought that was super cool. But it very much became about the polygonal boobs.
Yes.
Which is laughable. Like, if you look at the models today, they're just nonsense.
But they were amazing at the time.
Apparently, that's the thing. Like, yeah, this morning when I was working on the blog post, I was talking about a couple mods that I was running with Witcher 2, and I am consistently shocked at the number of thirsty mods that are available for games.
See, I don't know why you would be shocked by that. I would be shocked, like, if there weren't an infinite number of those.
I mean, I guess I just don't think about that. Like, yeah, a mod that removes all weight restrictions, hell yes, sign me up. Like 3 million different, like, there's a DICE mini game, and like, I swear there were at least 50 mods that were just some kind of nudie picture on the background of the DICE board. Like, really? Really?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the target audience for those, but I am 100% not surprised that they exist.
Yeah, I guess I'm naive a bit. So, other than gaming, what's something that brings you joy?
So, broadly, learning new things, but specifically in the last couple of years, I've taken up crocheting and taught myself knitting, and that has absolutely brought me joy and brought me solace and peace of mind. Through some very, very stressful times. I like learning new things, and my brain will absolutely keep working when I don't want it to. So having something to do with my hands, something that I can constantly learn new techniques and new skills, it definitely got me through the last couple years of graduate school with most of my sanity. And especially, I reached a sort of a moment of personal crisis, I guess, between working on my dissertation and playing a bunch of video games, that I hadn't ever actually created anything with my life. And especially when it felt like the dissertation was never going to be finished, I appreciate that I can make something with my hands in somewhere on the order of between hours and months. And at the end, I have a beautiful physical object to show for it. Because after playing MMOs in particular for a while, realizing how many hours I had poured into them, and I have some great friendships to show for it, for sure, but you know, nothing but pixels, which, as we saw with WildStar, can just disappear into the ether. So having pretty and tangible things definitely brings me joy.
So I never connected the dots, but like, was daily creative thing at least somewhat spurred on by the fact that WildStar was at that point dying?
I mean, it was partially that, But I think it was this broader thought process, right? So the impending loss of WildStar, because I started it before WildStar ended, obviously, but there's a long lingering...
It was about a year and a half or so that the writing was kind of on the wall, and like we all thought it might happen.
And so that just, you know, it makes you think about the impermanence of what we do in the digital world. So it was definitely a contributor. I think a lot of it was also the, you know, my on the school side of just kind of being unhappy in what I was doing and feeling like I was working forever for something that I was not sure was ever going to actually work out, and feeling some frustrations. And so having, and especially just, you know, some of the depression and anxiety and things that go along with that, just stress. So having a creative outlet where I could feel like I was making something and it might even be useful. Even, I mean, not really. I don't know how many scarves I really need, but at least a scarf is a useful object. So it felt good to be able to make something.
I love watching them evolve, like, especially when it's longer projects. Because, you know, I don't spend that much time on the actual blog itself, but like I always look at the progress pictures when you tweet the blog out. So like watching the progress of the child was especially like mesmerizing to me, because like I don't think I could ever make something like that. And like you definitely knew where you were going from the start.
Well, I mean, the secret is, you know, I almost always I'm working from a pattern. So it's usually not like I'm making this stuff up as I go along. Every once in a while, the May that I made, she was definitely sort of started from a pattern, but I made her up myself, but mostly from patterns. But yeah, I love when I get to the end of the project, a long project, and I can sometimes we'll gather up all the progress photos from the whole project and post them all together, and just sort of looking at them all together and seeing how something grew from a tiny scrap into, you know, a stuffed animal or a blanket or something interesting. It's always really fun for me.
Well, and I've only seen bits and pieces of it because I've had lots of friends that like were part of it. But it seems like the knitting community is super awesome and supportive.
Yeah, so this is something that shouldn't have surprised me, I guess, but kind of did. And in particular, I hang out a lot on a site called Ravelry, which has just everything you could want for the hobby in one place. It has patterns and forums and a blog and instructions and links to lots of people, you know, vendors selling items. So sort of a one-stop shop, which is great. But also, I mean, they made the news last year, I believe, for basically calling out some aspects of Trump's behavior as hate speech and requesting that people not actively support Trump on their website. And they got a little bit of pushback from that, but they stood their ground. And so a small, annoying contingent of people left. But mostly everyone got on with their knitting. And it's been fine. They're actively welcoming to any identity that you could think of, and they've been actively involved over the last months in, you know, making sure that there are more voices from people of color. It's just, I don't know, it gives me warm fuzzies to be part of that sort of community, especially after some of the things that the gaming community has done over the years. it's night and day.
And I think that's the most frustrating thing for me, as having been, you know, like a gamer pretty much my entire life, before it really condensed into an identity. Like, there are so many amazingly generous and open pockets of the community, but, like, there are also truly heinous and wretched areas of the community. And it's really hard for me to reconcile those two things.
Yeah, at this point, I just try to cut the bad parts out of my life and get on with my day, because I no longer have the time to actively fight them. And I've certainly, you know, burrowed my way into a close-knit small community that makes me feel like I don't have to venture out into the wilds if I don't want to.
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad, and I also love at the same time that I have this protective bubble that, like, there's a lot of times when something controversial is going on that, like, I never see it reflected in my social connection, to the point where, like, I have to start Googling, and then I'm appalled when I finally see what's going on. And, like, on one hand, I feel bad because, like, am I just isolating myself? But also there's mental sanity at the same time, and I don't want to have horrible stuff in my world.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so many hours in the day, and especially for me, you know, the last year or two of my life have been intensely busy, and I have other things to fight for, so I have become a lot more ruthless lately in keeping my downtime as downtime, and choosing to pick fights when I need to at work and not in my personal life.
Yeah, and I guess for me, like, 2020 is a year that I'm trying to actively make a bunch of changes, and starting this back up, for example, is one of those, because, you know, like, I've not been in the greatest mental space for the last several years, and I'm trying to seize control again of making changes to make myself happier.
You should take up knitting.
I think knitting would actually be just insanely relaxing, but I don't know if I would ever choose it over gaming. And that's kind of the challenge that I always end up in. Like, so reading, for example, I love reading, and I've been back reading a lot lately, but I never get to the point where I choose a night of reading instead of a night of gaming. And I probably should, because, like, I'd probably be happier if I did that more often. But, like, I am caught in this pattern of I go home and a game. Even if I just, like, stare at Steam for 2 hours while I sort of kind of watch something on television at the same time, I'm just, like, locked into that pattern of that's what I do. That's my life. So it's just weird.
So that is the time where I appreciate having knitting or crocheting as a hobby, because it's exactly those times where I'm half staring at Steam, can't decide what to do with myself, half watching TV, that I can get up and say, no, I'm going to knit and watch TV. And yeah, I have no regrets.
So what's one of your biggest fears?
So I think we've talked quite a bit about this, but I have really bad imposter syndrome. So, you know, one of my biggest fears is suddenly everyone will figure out that I don't know what the hell I'm doing and call me out on it. Especially, you know, I've been trying to get better about it. And on the one hand, this past year has been really amazing and confidence building for me. I've done some just insane things. I've been in the room with some important people and represented organizations that are so much bigger than I am. And so it's awesome that people trusted me to do that. But also, on the other hand, it just reinforces the imposter syndrome exponentially, because what on earth are people doing letting me sit in those rooms?
Right. It just increased the stakes. Like,
yes.
Oh, so when they do find out I'm a fraud, it's just going to be worse now.
Yeah. And, you know, I know that I have nothing. Like, I should not feel that way. I have a doctorate. I earned it. I worked my butt off for it. And I can absolutely say that I know more than anyone else in the world about that stupid specific thing that I studied for 6 years. But it still hasn't made me feel 100% comfortable in my skin, and especially knowing that, you know, I'm starting a new job in the next month. It's creeping back in a bit. What if people just realize I don't know what I'm doing? What will happen to me? I will be cast out. I don't know.
I have to say, like, from my side, I am so thankful to have you in my life, because you and I share a bunch of the same anxieties and our brains work in very similar ways. And having a mirror at times to see what's going on in my life reflected back with what's going on in your life helps immensely.
Yeah, right back at you. I think, you know, especially, you know, the other thing that we certainly share is that introverted need to become a turtle and hide from the world sometimes. And I honestly feel like having you around to non-judgmentally bounce that off of when it happens actually helps me recover much faster from when I have those episodes. Because I know if I went to some of my other friends and just pinged them and said, I feel like a turtle, I don't really feel like being social, they would get worried or try to actively do something to draw me out. And that is not helpful when I feel that way.
That's just going to make me turtle even harder if you try and draw me out. But, like, there have been times where, like, there's a state that you and I both get into that is impossible to explain to anyone else, of I want to be around another friend, but I'm also going to spend large chunks of time just not interacting at all while doing it.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Like, it's comforting to know that there is another human being around and we could chat if we wanted to, but also we could just silently hang out while playing Diablo. And it's just good to know that there's another person there and not have the expectation of we should be having a conversation. Oh, like, I just want to hang out. That doesn't mean I want to talk.
Yeah. And, you know, like, especially with the Diablo thing is like, we've run together so much that, like, we're kind of on autopilot, like, and don't have to really worry about the other human being, like, being there, because they're just going to be there and it's cool. And, you know, it makes the monsters drop better stuff because there's another human being. But
right.
So when I started compiling a list of people, like, I was absolutely certain that you were going to be the person that I tried this out on, because, like, if it was going to work, it was going to flow the most naturally with you because, you know, all these reasons.
And because I am happy to be a guinea pig and will always follow you into nonsense the same way you always follow me into nonsense.
So is there anything that you would want to plug? Like, I don't know if there's projects that you want to plug now or not.
I mean, the main thing that I will plug is my blog, Daily Creative Thing, which .wordpress.com. Which probably ought to be an Instagram, given that I don't actually usually write that much, but because I'm old and I don't feel like dealing with Instagram, the whole Facebook ecosystem, I will just steadfastly stick with this blog. But that's really the main thing that I have going on right now. I don't have, you know, I've shuttered my gaming blog since WildStar shuttered. You know, there's nothing else much that I would promote in that realm. So, yeah, or follow me on Twitter at Disgrace.
And, of course, there's AggroChat.
There is always AggroChat. But if people are listening to this, they probably already know that, I hope.
Yeah, like, I still am shocked that people listen to anything we do, but they apparently do.
I still always just tell myself that no one is actually listening, and we just record those because it's fun to hang out with each other once a week, which I think is how we all sort of feel about it.
I mean, that's the only reason why we've made it to, like, almost 300 episodes, because it's just a convenient time for us to sit down together and chat for a while. Because, like, we do so much less of the just hanging out on voice than we used to, because life got busy for a lot of us.
Yeah, people with fancy jobs and small children and all kinds of life things happening. But it's still fun to hang out and talk for an hour or two. And it's good to have an excuse to do that.
Yeah, and I think that's in part why I wanted to reboot this concept, is because, like, it was a good excuse to sit down and have maybe a more intimate conversation with a friend. Because, like, AggroChat is awesome, but, like, it's also very multiplayer. I mean, it's not as direct as just sitting and talking to a person for a while. And, you know, this dynamic's nice, too.
I've certainly enjoyed this.
Well, thank you again for being the first of the new folks. I am shocked and amazed that as many people have said yes to this as they have, because, like, I totally expected that, like, oh, I'm going to make this big list, and, like, over half are going to say no. So maybe I'll have as many episodes as the first run were to follow on. But no, like, almost everybody has said yes, so I don't know what the hell I'm going to do with myself.
You have the best candy, Bill.
Apparently. But again, imposter syndrome refuses me from understanding that. Anyway, standard sign off. I hope you enjoy this thing. And pending I can get them scheduled and recorded, we're going to have a bunch more of these. And my hope is that, like, people enjoy them. So I will see you again next time. Good night.
Bye.